One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Welcome to Queer Storytime, the podcast. This is a brave space for sharing queer and trans stories of radical affirmation, acceptance, empowerment, and healing. I'm your host, Stevie Ingram. I so look forward to you joining us. If you haven't done so already, please be sure to subscribe to this podcast. Alrighty, y'all, queer in 3, 2, 1. Let's go. Happy Pride, y'all. It's officially Pride Month in June 2024, and it's also the 10th episode of Queer Storytime, the podcast. This is a celebratory episode of Queer Storytime, given that we've finally reached episode number 10, and we're also featuring several queer and trans elders on today's community episode of Queer Storytime. My intention for this episode is to feature 4 queer and trans elders to share the lived experiences of those with a little bit more wisdom and knowledge of our queer and trans history. Before I introduce today's guests, I do have some brief housekeeping to take care of. Firstly, I recently discovered that Queer Storytime is in the top 10 of podcasts within both India and the Philippines. So Queer Storytime is doing great in South and Southeast Asia. I truly appreciate each and every single one of you that have found a value in this podcast and are enjoying listening to these stories of those within our worldwide community. It's truly a blessing to be present for these stories and to hopefully facilitate healing and insight within each one of you listening to this podcast. To all of you, my listeners, I do want to encourage you to get involved with the Queer Storytime community. I would love to hear from you via social media or email. You can let me know what you would like to learn about on Queer Storytime, or if you have any guests that you think would be great to have on the podcast. I want to know. I also would love to hear about any insights that you're having from listening to this podcast as well. Soon, I will be launching a Queer Storytime Facebook group so that we can create community and connection off of the podcast. I'll soon be announcing when this group will be available by the release of the next episode. To contact me, you can find me on social media at Queer Trans Thriving, which is one word, on Instagram, or you can contact me at the email provided in the description of this episode. Please note that if you do decide to contact me, I absolutely will not respond to any hateful messages or respond to those seeking any kind of medical advice, as I cannot provide that right now. Also, please be patient with me and my responses to you if you do decide to reach out. As many of you know, I'm a full-time medical student that has many responsibilities, so I do appreciate you being mindful of these things in advance. So with all of this housekeeping noted, I invite you to sit into a comfortable seated position, and we're just going to take a couple mindful breaths together to come into a place of centeredness, peace, and ease. So if you would like, as I've mentioned in prior episodes, you can close your eyes or just have a downward cast gaze. And bring your inner awareness to the breath. Notice where you feel the breath in the body. Allowing the inhalation to expand the abdomen and chest. And on the exhalation, allowing everything to settle back down. Breathing in. Breathing out. Just a couple more breaths here together. Noticing where you feel the breath in the body, inhaling and exhaling. One more breath together, deep inhalation. Deep exhalation. And then as you're ready, you can begin gently opening the eyes and reintegrating into the space that surrounds you. So now it's officially time to introduce today's guests in this celebratory Pride episode of Queer Storytime. Two of these guests on today's episode have been prior guests on Queer Storytime, and two of them will have their own future episode on Queer Storytime in the near future. But as mentioned, my intention is to do this community episode of Queer Storytime to celebrate Pride Month and the wisdom and experience of our queer and trans elders. As you know, I normally read each guest's bio. However, today I'm going to have each guest briefly introduce themselves. So now let's start with Ms. Trisha Carlisle.
Thank you for such a wonderful introduction, Stevie. I love you. My name is Trisha Carlisle. I am a trans woman. A woman of trans lived experience. My transition began over 35 years ago, and I'm currently residing in the same wonderful city as Stevie in Phoenix. And I am very, very gracious and excited to be a part of this absolutely wonderful conversation that we're planning to have today.
Thank you, Trisha. Next up, Mr. Jackson Pace.
Hey, Stevie. Thank you. I'm Jackson Pace. I live in Orange, California. I'm a trans man. I'm a newbie trans. I've been out as a lesbian since 1985, but started my transition in 2019. So I'm relatively a youngbie in the trans community, but I have been around the queer community most of my adult life. I am so honored and grateful to be a part of this podcast celebrating the people that came before us, the people that set the way for us. So thank you, Stevie, for having me.
I love that. You're absolutely welcome. Next up is Mr. Michael Peterson.
Hi, Stevie. It's really an honor and a pleasure to be here with you guys all. It's always exciting to be part of this Queer Story Time because it's doing such a great thing by putting everybody's stories out there and reaching people. I've heard many people tell me that they've listened and thought that there was nobody else with a story like theirs, right? So I think this is amazing and I'm happy to be a part of it. I'm here in Seattle, Washington, and I came out when I was 17, gay man, and just been through all of it since since before AIDS and everything else, through all that and then out the other end of it, and kind of just basically sharing my story so that other people know what it was like and what we all went through and what we all fought for and still need to fight for, obviously, more. But yeah, happy to have this conversation. Excited.
Great to have you here. Michael was one of my initial guests when I started Queer Storytime, and so was Trisha as well back in 2021, I believe. But we can talk more about that later. So our last guest for today, last but not least, is Jumpa Wurst. Coming in from Germany. Go ahead, Jumpa.
Hello, I apologize for my bad voice. I have high fever, but I am happy that in spite of that, you invited me. My name is Jumper. I'm from North Germany, Baltic Sea. I am a non-binary or trans-mas person, and I am the founder of the International Queer Buddhist Conferences. And I also was lucky to work with UCTV in the Queer Story cast and on the International Queer Buddhist Conference and on the Conscious Connections of the IQBC.
Wonderful. I'm so grateful to have you here again, Jumper. Thank you all for introducing yourselves. I'm so excited to have you here on Queer Storytime. So as I've mentioned several times already, I wanted to provide this platform for our queer and trans elders to talk about our history or our herstory, whichever one you would like to express. But I want to really go back in our history because we've talked about so much on this podcast already. All of the laws that are being created against queer and trans people. And I want to take us back through our history and allow people that lived through those times to share stories about what happens. One of the big aspects of queer and trans history is known as the Stonewall Riots, which happened on June 28th, 1969. So this year we're celebrating the 55th anniversary of the Stonewall Riots. And then of course, we also all remember the AIDS epidemic that happened in the 80s and early 90s. So I just want to take us through this history because I think there's a lot that all of us can learn from that history and from people that lived through those times in order to inform how we proceed now, given all of the laws, not only happening here within the United States, but around the world globally that are being created against queer and trans people. So I thought it was super important to have this episode during Pride Month. And like I've said, to feature those that have lived through this history that are still alive and with us today. So let's kick off the conversation. Anybody that would like to reflect on, you know, what I've just expressed about queer and trans history?
Well, I am not a native speaker and not an American. So I would go a little bit deeper into history because in Germany, in 1871, we had a law that came into existence against homosexual men. And this law was not only through the Nazi system, and during the Nazi system, it was also due for non-binary and trans and lesbians. So the lesbians, they got the triangle with the big L for lesbian, but it lasted until 1969 that this law in Germany was cancelled so that people who were called adults over 21 years old, they were allowed to have a sexual relation, but not under this age. And this year, to make it short and to give you more space, this year we were very lucky because finally the self-determination law came into existence on April 12th and it really passed what nobody believed. So people in the trans spectrum are allowed to have their name and their gender legally. And the funny thing is, it will be valid on November 1 this year. Wonderful. But because we first have to think about if we really want to change our name or have the gender we always wear, there is a 3 months waiting time. But again, the funny thing is, we can go 3 months earlier to our town. So on 1st of August, we will go to our towns and say, hey, on the 1st of November, we want to have our real name in the identity card and in the passport and the gender. So it's a very, very long time from 1871. And I know in the US, Stonewall, for the whole world, Stonewall was so important. But there's so many around the world. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing, Jumper. This is, yeah, important history to note. This is why I wanted to have this conversation, that it even goes back into the late 1800s and probably even prior to that, that this struggle has been happening at least for the last 200 years, essentially. And then the influence, like you said, of Nazi Germany. And, you know, I know there was a physician during that time that was studying gender and sexuality. And, you know, that whole clinic got shut down. And we had an entire history of queer and trans knowledge burned to fire, essentially, by the Nazis. And I think we're seeing that intersection with white supremacy that stems from Nazi Germany and other times in our history that seeks to invalidate queer and trans people, which is, I think, just another iteration of what's happening today with all of these laws worldwide being created against us. Although it's also at the same time, we're celebrating what happened in Germany with this self-identification law where queer and trans people can self-identify in governmental records and on birth certificates and everything else. So that's amazing progress. You constantly feel like we're making progress and we're set back all at the same time. It's like, we can't win. So who else would like to go ahead, Jackson?
Well, you know, I'm old. So I actually was 10 years old when Stonewall happened. And the riots actually lasted 3 days. They started on June 28th and went through July 3rd. So 3 or 4 days. So it was a constant, you know, barrage for these poor people. Queer people just trying to live their lives and be happy. You know, the mafia controlled 99% of the queer bars in New York at that time. So they were kind of protected for a while, but the cops still raided them. And that's what started Stonewall. A lot of people don't realize that queer bars were raided on a nightly basis. Stonewall was special in it for itself because it was the only bar in New York at that time that allowed drag. And it was out of those drags that Sylvia Rivera came, Marsha P. Johnson. So obviously to trans women, we owe everything that we have to them. We're on their shoulders, right? So it was an interesting time to be alive because at 10, I mean, I knew I was different, but still wasn't quite sure what the hell I was or who I was. Like I share with Stevie on my podcast, I've known since I was 3, I was trans. I just didn't have a word for it, didn't know how to express it and didn't know what to do. But at 10, I was aware enough to know that what these people were going through and what was being done to them was horrible and it was wrong. And then after that, we had the fire at Library Lounge, which was another queer bar in New York where a lot of gay men died that night. So if you look at history and if you look at the civil rights movement, hand in hand with the queer movement, because Marsha P. saw what was happening in the South and with the civil rights movement. And I think she applied some of that strategy or just some of that fire, more or less, because she was so unapologetic about who she was, even back in the 60s. And it was so surreal to be watching TV on a black and white TV and you're seeing all the stuff happening in a place in New York City and you're in a little town in Louisiana and you're going, okay, I don't know why this is important, but this is going to be important in my life. So it was a very interesting and scary time because we were going through the civil rights riots. We had the queer riots. And then you had all the protests for the war in Vietnam, all during that one and that decade of the 60s. So it was a very much a time of civil unrest in the country. And our movement just really gained traction and became first and foremost in the front of mind of people during that time, I think, as well.
Thank you for that, Jackson. I find it interesting that you expressed that, you know, you were only 10 years old at this time, but you knew, you kind of felt in an embodied way that this was important to you at that early of an age.
Yeah, because, you know, especially when you would see the women that were far more butch than the normal femme women. And you saw those, and I saw myself kind of reflected there. And that was the first time in my life I'd ever seen anybody that looked sort of like how I felt or how I looked. And like I said, I was young and in the South, and, you know, that's a deadly combination. I'm glad I was alive. I'm glad I witnessed that. You know, I've been fortunate. I've witnessed so much history in my life. And being in the queer and trans community, I'm glad I was there to see what happened and how these people were treated and how they fought. And it made me become a fighter and a survivor and a person that just wants to live in the joy.
Amen. Trisha, go ahead.
Thank you for sharing all of this. Hearing all of this right now, you have to remember that I was not around when all of this happened. I also did not know what trans was early on in my lifetime. I knew I was also different. Again, didn't have a word for it. But as I got older, as I hit my late teens, my 20s and into my 30s, you know, I started learning more about like the Stonewall. And I'm like, okay, this is very, very, very important history for me. This is not just what happened to the entire community. This also happened to everyone before me, and it kind of helped to pave the way for me, but also kind of shape who I am and who we all are in some way. And so the more I hear these stories that happened back then from all these people, I've watched dozens, if not hundreds, of videos from other people who, other trans, other LGBT, who lived this experience. It's a very emotional time for me when I'm watching these videos, because I'm seeing what happened to all of them. And I realize how many of our community actually take for granted what we have right now. And it's important to remind everybody that you have to step back in time and really look at what happened and pay close attention to these stories to know how we got here to where we are now. For a brief moment, not too long ago, we were on an upward swing. We were doing really, really well. We're making a lot of progress. And then 2016 happened, and then we just kind of slid backward again. It's been a constant yo-yo all this time, and it's such a struggle. But just knowing where it all started and knowing the root of all this, even though it's been happening a long, long time, it took a very long time for someone to finally stand up and say, we've had enough. It's time for change. It's time for something to happen. You know, we are here. We are valid. We are important. We are lives. We're not just a letter and an acronym. We matter. I think that's the most important part of this conversation now, as we still keep Stonewall and everything that happened back then in the forefront of our mind. It's important to, you know, keep moving forward and try to get back to, you know, that upward momentum again. We have a lot of people against us. We have a lot of forces coming together against us. But just listening to these stories, it both warms and breaks my heart, you know? So that's just my immediate input on this right now.
Thank you, Trisha. Jhumpa, I know that you have something to say. I just want to give Michael a chance to respond. I see him shaking his head and smiling. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, I definitely relate to what Jackson was saying. I'm 63 now, going to be 64 in September. So it's like I was 9 or so when all this was going on. And I remember sitting at the dinner table, and then after dinner, we couldn't watch TV during dinner, but we were all at the table, very religious family. And so then after dinner, we could watch the news and stuff. And it would always be about Martin Luther King and all this stuff and all the things that were going on. And I really felt that it was like, oh my God, here's this man like standing up. Even just even though I was a little kid, this man is standing up and saying, look it, we are equal and the same, and we all need to get along. Stop the dumb bickering and everything, and everybody just like accept each other. We're just different people and we're going to all survive together. Anyway, so you're hearing this message, and then you see the Stonewall riots thing happen, and then you're kind of putting it all together in your head. I knew I was gay since I was like a little tiny kid, right? I mean, you just know these things, obviously. So like, these are my people fighting, you know what I mean? And then to hear my family say, oh, you know, that's so bad. And it's just because they didn't understand, in their ignorance, doesn't feel it. They didn't know that I'm sitting there feeling the way I'm feeling. So it took all this happening. And then when I was 17, I just kind of broke and said, okay, this is me. Because exactly like what Trisha was saying, I'm seeing this as a role model now, finally. Gay people are strong. We have to just stand up and say, look, I am this. And it's not the same as you, but still valid and equal. So that's kind of where I was with it. I left the church, even our family church, which was a huge thing, and tried to look around for another church for me. It didn't work out really. I was just on my own doing my own thing. Now, thank God, I had a really nurturing, loving family. So when I went out into the world of gay people, most of them had been thrown out and everything, because back then people just disowned their children. And so I was kind of the mom, you know, trying to get everybody back on, you know, you're strong, you can do it. You know, you got all this drive. Don't be afraid. We're just going to have to do it. If somebody's coming after us, we'll gang up and fight if we have to. But that's not the first thing. That was really hard to get through to people. We can't fight just the very first thing. Try to talk it out. Try to work it out. Try to make people see us as people. Tell them your name. Tell them who you are. Tell them about yourself a little bit so they can see you as a person, not just as a thing. And then work it through and stuff. Anyway, so I've been preaching that. I was really young. But yeah, it's just all of this stuff. It's so important to have gone through all that. And then to pop out kind of okay in the early 80s, everything was kind of getting better, right? And so then AIDS hits and it all fell apart again. And so then we're struggling again. But in that time, after the later 70s, the early part of the 80s, it wasn't so bad. For one, I think because we didn't have social media, you didn't have masses of people telling you you're horrible. You just had your own little bubble and they all saw you for the person that you are and realized you're a good person. So there must be something to it that they didn't understand. And Lord knows I took enough time to talk to everybody who wanted to talk about it, about every little thing. And, you know, no secrets, because it's like, you got to understand. I want you to understand me. So anyway, we went through all of that. So things were really good for a while there. And then now I feel like after the AIDS thing finally kind of like wasn't the issue anymore, now we're facing a whole new issues that we're a worldwide community and people can gang up on us a lot easier, which is hard to deal with. And it's like somebody that might be open to hearing a different truth than their own, which is the most important thing to me in the world, will hear other things from other people and then just like side up with them, because people that are kind of not really sure about things are going to find a team, right? So anyway, I think that's what we're facing right now, is this whole, we're a global society now and we all have to get along, and it's like really difficult. And people always would say to me, you were 17 way back then, it must have been so hard to come out. I'm like, it was way easier than it is for these kids today. Way easier. So yeah, I think that the history is important because it always repeats itself, right? We know that too. And so it's like it cycles. We got to get through this cycle. Don't give up. We got to get through this cycle. It'll get better again. Have complete faith it will.
Thank you, Michael. You brought up two points that I want to come back to, but I want to allow Jhampa to speak first. But if I forget, I want us to talk about how are we as a community dealing with all of this online hatred that you guys never experienced when you were younger? And number two, I want to bring light to the AIDS epidemic as well. But before we do that, I know Jhampa had some things to say. So Jhampa, take it away.
Thank you. I wanted to add to Trisha, we can't have things like granted. They are not granted. Even if some laws like this self-determination law became valid, on the other hand, there are laws in Germany. We have 16 different federal states there where you are not allowed to speak or write in gender-inclusive language, for example, or where trans women are not allowed to go in women's spaces. And this doesn't make any sense. So this back and forth, also what Michael said, is still like a battle. It's becoming more and more aggressive. And yes, I think you are really true. It has to do with the social networks. I have been realizing that through the years, especially now when the conference, the International Queer Buddhist Conference, which is the fourth, it's called Buddhism is Trans. It's not only for trans people, but it is for trans people. And some messages, some emails, some phone calls, direct phone calls are so horrible. I was threatened to death. I had to call the police and so on. So although sometimes laws get better, on the other hand, the aggressiveness increases and increases and increases, because people want to have it. In Germany, it would be under the floor. So they don't want to see it. They don't want to hear about it. It shouldn't be there. We shouldn't be there. And if you make it official and say, hey, there is a conference, it's online, you can come from everywhere, from the US, from Bangladesh, from wherever, then people get scared. Yeah, so we have to fight, and I'm happy that we have this community and that we are in touch. Otherwise, life is not possible at all when you are out.
Yeah, thank you, Jhampa. I think that leads us into this conversation about how are you personally dealing with all of this online hatred? Quite honestly, for me, TikTok is an amazing thing. I know Trisha started out talking about that, but TikTok's community guidelines, they don't honor their community guidelines, essentially. And there's so many of us in the community are continually bullied for trying to educate people. I got up to 12,000 followers. I know Trisha had probably 25, 30,000 followers, maybe more. You know, out of the sincerity of your heart, you're trying to have conversation with people, like you said, Michael, to do everything you can to educate them. And they're just feeding back vitriol and hatred. So for me personally, I was like, you know what? I'm not using TikTok anymore. It's not useful to me energetically to be always combating this hatred. So just curious about ways in which you all have approached this topic. It's going to be good to hear from elders, because especially our queer and trans youth that are not only being bullied in school, but now they come home from school and they're bullied all day online. It just, my heart sinks to my stomach. So what are some of your thoughts on that?
So I'm going to try to keep this short, because I could talk about this particular subject all day long. Social media in and of itself can be one of the best tools for us to be able to get out to people the truth about who we are, you know, the education that they need, the education that some should want and many do want. What I found in the year and a half, 2 years.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Tired of trying diet after diet without results? Mochi Health offers a long-term weight loss solution personalized to your needs. Our board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians provide expert guidance to help you succeed. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medication at an affordable set price delivered monthly. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 for $40 off your first month. That's joinmochi.com.
Years that I had trends, et cetera, up and going pretty strong. What I was not expecting to find, honestly, is that there was just as much adversity to LGBTQIA+ altogether, especially trans culture, non-binary culture, queer culture. There was such a disconnect in our own community. So not only was I having to educate people who didn't really understand our community, we were also having to educate people within our community about each other, because there was such a disconnect between the queer community and the trans community, or the gay community and the trans community. And still today, there's such a disconnect because people in our own community do not like each other. You know, I think the biggest challenge for me when it comes to social media is not just battling what's coming at me and coming at us from people outside the community, but also from within. And when they see people from within our own community going at each other, it's not great, because then they're like, well, hell, you guys can't even get along together. How are we supposed to understand and believe and learn from you if you're not even on the same page? So that was a really huge issue for me with trans, et cetera, was getting through all of that. But in terms of the hatred that's coming at us from the outside, I've always been a very strong proponent for educating with kindness. I think it's important to put videos and content and podcasts, put them out so that people have a chance, if they really want to, they can listen to what we have to say. That is one of the biggest obstacles that we have right now, is some people don't want to listen. They're from either a group of people or a family or a time where they've had their own values and their own opinions and their own morals, regardless of how immoral they are. They've been instilled into them to the point to where they don't really want to listen to what we have to say. They have their opinions already. They already think they know what they know, and they're coming at us because, whether it's through Christianity, whether it's through any other medium that has shaped their mind, shaped what they think and how they feel, they're going to go by that. And if it doesn't agree with what we're saying, they're never really truly going to see us for who we are, because innately, from the very heart of them, they don't agree with us. So every now and then, I've had the opportunity to get through to people. For whatever reason, they've come forward, whether they've DM'd me or they've done it on a live, you know, in a comment somewhere, they've come forward and said, I used to believe this. I used to think this. I used to feel this way. but you really opened my eyes because seeing you say this and then hearing the people that are responding to you saying this, it's caused me to dive deeper into this particular subject. And so it's not just about trans or LGBT. It's a lot of things. I mean, I did videos on hormone replacement, you know, in terms of the trans community, and people were writing to me about, oh, wow, I didn't know this. This is great. Thank you for the education. So educating with kindness is always the way that I felt. If you know me at all, you know, I used to preach a lot about don't let irrelevant people have the power to bring you down and destroy you. And back in the time of COVID and before, when that message was going strong throughout all of my media, throughout all of my social, it was a little bit of a different time, because since 2016, we've actually had an uptick of the hatred that's surfaced. And we all know where that came from. Now they all feel like they have permission to treat us the way that they treat us. And that makes it even harder to combat. So I used to say, don't let irrelevant people have the power over you. But they're not irrelevant anymore. These people are relevant, very relevant to us, because these are the same people that are not just yelling at us online. They're finding us in alleys and dark corners and clubs. These are the same people who are now coming for us in the real world, thinking that they can just do anything they want to us. And it's a very dangerous time for us. So you have to be very careful on social media. You still have to be kind. You still have to educate with kindness. And anybody who feels like they want to talk about their lived experiences, absolutely do so, because that's how people are going to learn. You know, I realize there are people in our community who do not want to talk about their lived experience. They do not want to discuss being trans. They don't want to discuss their life before they transition. They don't want to discuss being queer or non-binary, because it opens so many doors for that hate, and they just don't want that rush coming at them that way. And I get it. I get it. But I'm a firm believer that if you are in the community in any shape, form, or fashion, and you feel that you want to discuss your lived experience with people so that people can be educated with that kindness, I absolutely implore and encourage you to do so. But there's really no right or wrong way to approach this on social media, because every conversation is going to be different, because the people that you're addressing are going to be different as well. And it's coming at us from different directions, and it's becoming increasingly hard to maintain that composure, which is why you really don't see me on social media much anymore, aside from the fact that I have a full-time job and I'm tired when I get off of work. I don't have time to be doing videos and content as much anymore. It becomes exhausting trying to stay in front of everybody and to give that education that people need and most people want. I think if you're the type that has the time, the energy, and the wherewithal to actually do that, then absolutely do that. It's important to stay in front of people, because otherwise, if you stay silent, you're just as complicit in what's happening to us. So,
some great insights there, Trisha. Thank you for that. What you were saying about how to handle all of this, it got me thinking about, many people may have heard this term before, but there's a term in the field of psychology called confirmation bias, which I think perfectly applies to this conversation. Like, when people of a marginalized identity are out in the world educating other people on their lived experiences, we, as that person receiving that information, you have the capacity to like truly listen to them. Or there's the like psychological phenomena where people filter their already existing beliefs. They filter the information of what you're saying against their already existing beliefs. And if there's an incongruence there, then that's going to create confirmation bias, where, you know, these more conservatively minded people that are creating all of these laws against us out in the world, their bias in the world is towards hatred of LGBT people. So if they're confronted with information from an LGBT person that conflicts those existing beliefs, they're going to have trouble with that incongruency. So this, to me, is the perfect conversation for all of us need to be doing our inward work. And like, what is it within myself that is not allowing me to open up to information that is different than what I may have learned or how I grew up? that can be even for us as LGBT people. There's particular ways in which we grew up. We might have particular beliefs about particular subjects. And, you know, when we're met with something that conflicts with our already existing beliefs, it's like, can we learn to hold space for that discomfort? Can we search out why it is that I am having discomfort with this? What's butting up against me right now? Just asking yourself those self-reflective questions, because if we're not being self-reflective, then we're not growing and progressing. We're just staying stagnant in our existing beliefs. That helps no one. So I would encourage everybody to reflect on that. I think it's been really difficult because you're not only serving as like an educator, but I don't know, there's just this essence of like, you're this person's therapist because they haven't done their own work. It's like, we shouldn't have to be playing all of those roles in educating people. So I'm getting a lot of head shakes here.
I agree 100% wholeheartedly with what you just said. I think in our own community, we need to do our own degree of introspection. We need to continue to learn and grow every day as well. I think it's important that we don't get just stuck on one topic, one situation, and keep those, you know, rose-colored glasses on. We need to look at everything from every perspective. Take a moment to listen to the people that are adverse to us and figure out why they feel that way. I mean, when you're trying to solve a problem, you don't just face it, you know, just at face value. You have to dig a little bit deeper into the problem and find out why it exists in the first place. And when it comes to conversations with people, you're going to butt heads. You're absolutely going to encounter people who have no desire to get past what they're feeling or what they're thinking. You know, maybe it's peer pressure. Maybe it's just they're stuck in this loop. They want to say something to sound important. They want to say something to make a point. And they're never going to sway from that, because if they do, they have to admit they're wrong. And people have an innate issue with that. So you have to be good at admitting that you're wrong, or being okay with saying, you know what, I'm open to learning because maybe my take on this is not exactly what it should be, or maybe I need to evolve and consider other people's takes as well, not just you in the world. But I just think it's really important that we all come together too, you know, even in the community, and just try and combat the miseducation and then contribute to more learning and education as well. We need to get rid of the infighting and we need to get on the same page. And you've got trans people especially, and gay people as well, you know, several walks within our acronym, within our community. People have their own lived experiences and they don't understand the lived experiences of others too. And so when they hear someone like me come forward and say, you know, I think we should be discussing these lived experiences, someone who's not comfortable with that, they don't agree with it. So instead of just saying, that's fine if you want to do that, but I don't feel like doing that, they'll tell me I'm wrong for doing so. And I'm like, no, I'm not wrong for talking about my lived experience. If I want to open up and I want to tell the world, you know, me, if I want to be an open book to people, that's my prerogative. I can do that all I want to, but I don't need people coming at me saying it's not my job to educate people. It absolutely is my job to educate people. I don't believe in sending people to Google, because Google is not a textbook, and there's 500 different sites and articles on one specific thing. And if they don't hear it from us, how do we know they're getting the truth? You know, I don't have a right. I'm not speaking for everybody, but my opinion, I don't have a right to get mad at you if you go to Google and you learn something wrong and you come back at me and you're saying this to me. And then I'm sitting there going, that's not right. I can't get mad at you because you learned that from Google, because if I'm not willing to tell you, if I'm not willing to educate you, what are your options? And if we in the community are not willing to educate people, what are their options? Google is not that type of learning source. There's just too much out there. And if we're not going to educate people, we need to at least send them in the right direction to find the information that they need, because we can't just expect them to learn this on their own. And people just sitting complacent and quiet when they want to learn, it's not helping them.
She's preaching, Hennies. So, Michael, how have you, or any insights you have on dealing with all of this online hatred?
Well, first of all, I want to say to Tricia, I agree, because Google I know the way the algorithms work. If you're a conservative person and you ask about queer things, it will give you conservative ideas. And if you're queer and you ask about straight things, it'll give you the queer version of it. You know what I mean? So we're not reading the same thing, first of all. So that does not work. And I've always been one to just like, I've always been an open book. If anybody has any question at all, I'm there, because the education is what it's all about. To me, it boils down to this. You're queer of any kind. You're coming into the world that's not made for you. How could you possibly be prejudiced against anyone else or biased against anybody else? I just don't even see that, but I know it happens. And so then you have to kind of pull it all the way back to that basic, like, this is happening. And then I used to, for a long time, thought it's just a matter of ignorance. Some people are educated and some people are not. And the people that are not are going by what everybody else tells them. And it doesn't work that way. But it's even an intelligent person, I think it comes down to critical thinking. It's not just the fact that you're intelligent. You have to look at something and say, okay, what am I looking at? And how does this fit together? And how does it fold together? And why do I have these triggers about when someone tells me somebody's trans or gay or whatever, you know, anything different than me? It's just this crazy thing. And we're coming now that we're this global society, that all happened way too fast, because we can't even accept each other in the same skin color or the same whatever, the same commonality things that we have. We're having trouble even there, let alone now we have to be cool with everybody doing whatever they want in the whole entire world and all the different cultures and all the different religions and all the different ideals of life. It's insane. So yeah, we're up against a huge, huge thing. But I still think that education is what it's all about. Even in this country, they say, are you Republican or Democrat? Well, some things I'm conservative about and some things I'm really not. And it just, you can't, and they're not my enemy. They're just somebody else that thinks a different thing than I do. We have so many things that are more common than we recognize, because we're all humans and we all want to be happy and live our life and do whatever. But it always gets focused on the things that are different and the things that can't be fixed, you know, how they get framed, and then it feels hopeless, but it's not. And we have to just keep at it. Now, to your point though, Stevie, I have a very small following on social media and I get very few horrible things said to me. And when I do, I just try to say the right thing back. Take a minute and not just snap at them, but take a minute and say, what am I going to say that's going to make them think? And so I try to do that. Now, there have been times when I was very strong feelings about something and the conversation went on to like 260 some, I remember this one conversation, like back and forth, other people chiming in and all kinds of stuff and everything. But still, I feel like I planted a seed. Still, I think they could see where my point was coming from, and it'll make somebody, one of all those people that were in on that conversation, it'll make some of those people think a little bit. I mean, I don't know what else we can do. And when you're getting attacked, like you all get, like avoiding it or whatever, I think isn't a bad thing. As long as you're still doing what you can do to move things forward where you can. Because some people are just in their thing and they're going to never, you know, come from out of it. I mean, my father and I, he was definitely very conservative and religious and everything like that. But we had so many conversations that we ended up being best friends. I mean, we're like so tight. And he loved me, even though he didn't understand one bit about what was going on. And I know that I had the benefit of being his son. But I mean, I've had other people around me that were very their own idea about what was right and good in the world, still be understanding and have conversations like that and help them understand that everybody is living their own life. We're just saying everybody has the right to live their own little life. We're not asking for anything special. We're just asking for the same, right? Once you kind of tell them, get it in their head that it's not like we're trying to be like have all these extra rights. We're just trying to have the rights that everybody else has. You know what I mean? And once you kind of get that clear to them, it makes a little more sense.
Yeah, that's really great, Michael. Thank you for all of that. I just want to briefly address that Jhumpa was here with us. Jhumpa noted that they were not feeling well at the beginning of this episode and just go rest. So thank you, Jhumpa, for being here for a little bit of this episode to your capacity, but we will carry on with the conversation. I just want to allow Jackson to speak on this whole situation with online bullying and what our queer and trans community faces right now.
Well, I'm sort of like Michael in that respect, is I don't make a lot of reels. You know, I don't post a lot of queer and trans content. That's not why I have my Instagram account. I have it more to connect with and make connections with people in our community, to find like-minded people, to see how they are. My favorite thing to do is amplify you guys' voices. Like Stevie, I share your reels all the time. I share James Barnes' reels. I share Alex Bill's. Trish, I used to share yours when you posted, because you guys so eloquently put things, and especially you younger ones like Stevie, you and James, you come in with a youthful look at this community, which I used to have back in the 80s and the 90s, but now, you know, I'm getting up in the years and I still have a youthful awe about it, because I guess maybe because I'm so new still to being trans, although I've been trans all my life, but just so, you know, living that trans experience. I find you guys friggin' amazing. I'm just going to say it right there. Y'all take more hits, more hate, and you just keep coming and you just don't stop. And occasionally when I comment on posts, especially if it's a queer gender related post and I make a comment, I've had haters come at me and I'm just like, well, I had this one guy. He's like, oh, so you're a woman. I'm like, you could say that. Yeah, I don't find that offensive at all. They don't know what to say, because being a woman, I mean, I'm sorry, women are amazing. They are, you know, and I've had that lived experience of living my life as a woman. And it's amazing the capacity that women have. And also too, I just want to note, I'm a trans male. Do you realize how far less we are hated on than trans women? Trans women get the bulk of the hate for the trans community. They do. Now, that's not to say we've had trans masculine men that have been murdered, that have been beaten up. All those horrible things have happened to them. But we do not get the sustained hate as much as trans women do. And I think the reason that is because cis white het men cannot understand why anyone would want to give up the privilege of being a white man, okay, or a man, period. Now, I will defend, if somebody says something bad about one of the content creators I share, I go, do you understand how hard it is for this person to do this, that they're doing this to keep our community together and to educate people, because you guys have been educated to belief system one way that doesn't believe in equality for one. And it's not everybody in this country, but as Trisha pointed out, since 2016, the hate reared its head and it just hasn't gone away. And it's not going away for any foreseen. I don't foresee it in the future going away, especially with everything that's going on globally right now. Because if you look at the attacks on the trans and queer community, horrible things that are happening in Gaza, the things that are happening all over the world at this time in Sudan and the Congo, it's all interrelated back to hate. All of that boils down to one simple thing: hate of people that are not exactly like you. So I'll keep elevating y'all and I'll keep fighting for our community that way. I choose to do podcasts and things like that for my way to do it and to share. And I do mentor several trans youth or have in our community. I try to get actively involved with them here. We have Pride coming up next weekend. We do a lot of Prides early because of the heat and everything in California. So actually next weekend we're doing Long Beach Pride and that'll be fun. But I'm kind of concerned that this may be our last Pride, depending on what happens in November. I'm just concerned about a lot of things right now. But to your point of the online hate, I don't get it as much as you guys do, because I don't put a lot of content. Like I said, I share everybody else's content and give you guys a credit, because y'all are the ones putting in the work and you're on the front lines. And I look at this like, I'm old. I've carried my pickets. I've marched in marches. I was 2 weeks after my top surgery was in LA marching a Black Lives Matter march in 2020. So, you know, I'm an activist. I still vocalize, but my job now, I feel, is to elevate the younger queer people and trans people, because y'all are the future. Y'all are the ones that are going to make the difference. We've gotten it to this point, right? It's your ball. It's time for y'all to run with it and shine. And I'm going to support y'all 110%, because we've gotten it to a point. Like, I had somebody say one time that they were sick of older trans people saying, oh, that the new trans people have it so easy. Nobody has it easy when they come out as trans or queer. Nobody does. And if it's easier now for trans youth and non-binary youth to access gender affirming care because of the roads like Trisha, Alex Billing made, all those people that came before us that came out as trans way before we did, then we've done our job as elders. We paved a way to make it easier for you. And you guys are going to pave this way to make it easier for the next generation. That's how it works. And that's how we fix this world. We have to make things easier, better, and accessible for our younger generations.
Amen. Thank you, Jackson. That was great. Go ahead, Trisha.
Okay, so I'm going to try to remember everything that's in my, listening to Michael and listening to Jackson. I'm like, oh my God, there's so many things I want to touch on right now. And I'm going to try to remember some of them. First of all, fresh in my mind, what Jackson was just saying about, you know, people being tired of trans elders saying, oh, the new generation has it so much harder. Or, you know, I think what a lot of people miss in that generalization is that back in the earlier times of us being elders, I mean, we started this in a different time where there was no social media. I mean, we were barely coming into cell phones. When I was in my early 20s, there was no such thing as an Android or an iPhone. There was no such thing as Facebook, MySpace, TikTok, Instagram, Meta, whatever. There was no such thing as all of this. So when someone came out as LGBTQIA, whatever, there wasn't as much attention on it because there was no flow. There was no push. There was no way for people to know this on a mass scale. There was no discussions being held on a mass scale. People weren't talking about it en masse. They were talking about it amongst themselves. And of course, you had your stigmas going on in high schools. You had colleges and families. Back in the 50s and 60s, before the 70s, the big push was religion. And when you think about it, everyone's thought process, even now, when you get into the conservative spaces, I'm not saying this to dog the conservatives or the Republicans, but just think about the fact that they largely base many of their thoughts and views and opinions on religion. And they're trying to turn the country into a theocracy. And that's not where we need to be headed, because we're supposed to have that separation of church and state. And where we're failing right now is the fact that that's not happening. There's no separation. And they're trying to push this whole religion thing on us. So back in those earlier days, you know, in the 40s, 50s, 60s, people's thoughts and their thought processes were based on religion. It's against the Bible. So therefore, it's against man. It's against God. So it's not great. It's not good. It's unacceptable. But these conversations weren't being had the way we have them now. Now, it seems like in some ways we have it easier because we have it better in that we can have these conversations widely. Like, this podcast is going to reach thousands upon thousands of people, you know, whereas in the 60s, that's not possible unless you're on the radio. So those are things that people need to kind of realize in the forefront of their mind too, that it's easier to get things out to people now. It's easier for the world to be listening collectively. We now have Google. We now have the internet. We have all this information. If people really want to find out something, I mean, I agree with Michael in the sense that the algorithm for Google, I never thought about this until he said that, but it's true. If you are conservative, you go to Google and you start typing in questions about something, it's going to give you a conservative point of view. I never even thought about Google having an algorithm that way. I think of TikTok having an algorithm, but it's very true. But it's just like, I have someone very close to me in my life who is absolutely 100% Republican. And I mean, even though we're close in a lot of ways, we differ in a lot of ways, and our conversations are very few and sparse because I can't have conversations with him because he's so rooted in his conservative Republican values. All of the news that he sees, I hear him when he's around and I hear these things coming through his phone, and they're all things that are just completely anti-Democrat, anti-left. That's just because each party has their own news sources and they tend to stay in those bubbles. So they're not hearing what's going on the left side. All they're hearing is what the right side's saying about the left side and what they're translating from the left. And the same thing with the left. I want to say that we're more open in that regard to hearing what's happening everywhere and trying to put it all into perspective. We're not stupid. We see what's happening in the world, but we have a little bit more of an open mind about things versus, you know, someone who's rooted in religion. They're never going to accept us. They're never going to come to terms with the fact that it's okay for us to exist because it goes against what they've been taught in their Christian teachings. Now, I'm not grouping all Christians together in this because I know there are some really amazing Christians out there who believe and live and let live. You know, it's not my place to judge you because, you know, I believe there is a God and God's going to judge you for whatever you're doing. But it's my position to just let you live your life and be you and love you for it. Those are the people that are more interested in learning what we have to say. So we're always going to have that adversary. I don't think we're ever going to be in a world where we're going to be communing all together, holding hands in kumbaya. It's never going to be that. We're never going to be able to eradicate all that. But that doesn't mean that we can't try to get through to as many people as possible, you know, in that regard. But yeah, so that's kind of where I am with that right now. I think there's so many key differences that we need to keep in mind about who we were then and who we are now. We're the same. It's just now we have different ways of having these discussions. And because we have the internet, all of this is amplified and the conversations have become harder because now there are more people having them. And everyone has their opinions. Everyone has their hot takes. Everyone thinks that they know what's right for everyone else when they really just need to let people live and let live.
We're getting thumbs up and smiles and head nods and all of that for those that aren't watching on YouTube. These are all valid points, especially the whole point about this conversation is happening en masse. That kind of makes it, because everybody has their opinions about all of this, it makes it so much more complex to have these conversations, you know, where maybe in the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, before all the internet came out, it was easier to sit down and have a one-on-one conversation, you know, one day and then just be going on about your life and have these continual little bits of conversations throughout your lifetime. And then now we're being like bombarded with everybody's opinions, everybody's thoughts on this. And it does make it so much more difficult to get effective information across to people because we're kind of butting up against so many people's beliefs about this. One of my goals, as I know all of you here know, is to get queer and trans affirming care into the integrative and holistic medicine space. You know, and I see people when I open up these conversations, I always start these conversations with the fact that basically I express that, like, in prior generations, the conversation that we're about to have has been socially taboo. And so, like, starting from that place that these were like difficult conversations to have in the first place, even though I know that people were having them, I think we're progressing, which is one of the good things about social media, even though there's all this conflicting information a lot of times, is that making this conversation public destigmatizes it. And we can transition into this, but talking about HIV and AIDS, which still has stigma to this day. Now it has a hell of a lot less stigma because these conversations are out in the public. Nowadays, you see television ads promoting preventatory medications known as PrEP for HIV or medications for those living with HIV that can help suppress their viral load and they can live a normal life well into their 70s, 80s and beyond. I think the conversation moving from private spaces and one-on-one conversation to public, to all of the public awareness that's being brought to this conversation is really going to amplify all of this happening, you know, especially these conversations happening in medical education environments, nursing environments, healthcare environments in general. I see this as a good thing, even though we've been talking about all along how hard it is to combat all of the misinformation. Just the sheer fact that we can have open public dialogue about this shows the progression that we've made over the last 50 plus years, which is really exciting, even though we still have a long way to go. So let's transition a little bit now to having that conversation about the whole AIDS epidemic, because that was just kind of formative aspect of our queer and trans history, you know, which started in, I believe, the late 80s. So, Michael, maybe you can start us off on that conversation.
Sure. Actually, it was 1982. The first I heard, I was in Seattle, living in Seattle. I grew up on the eastern side of the state and then moved over here. Well, actually, I moved to Louisiana for a year. But anyway, then I came here. So I was like early 20s. So I would have been like 21. You kind of heard rumors of it kind of in a weird way at the bars, and people were kind of whispering about this weird thing that was going down. And then all of a sudden on the front of one of the major Newsweek or Time or whatever it was, it said something about the gay cancer. And that's how it came out first, because of the Kaposi sarcoma that that would show up, that would be kind of like a telltale mark. Then they would get it all over, but you'd mostly see it on people's faces. But anyway, so then all of a sudden everybody freaked out. I mean, like freaked out. It was like all of a sudden, like somebody lit a match to a kindling pile and it was just like a boof. Even like thought their roommate might have HIV or something, they would throw their stuff out on the lawn. And I mean, you know, it was horrible. And if there was somebody that did test positive, when they finally figured out how to test positive, my brother, that was just older than me, was also gay, and he was one of the first ones to test positive. But they were testing him for hepatitis, I believe, or something. They were using a different test because the doctors were just letting it happen because it was happening in the gay culture. So they just didn't worry. It didn't get the attention it was supposed to get. There's a lot of really good movies out about all that. Julia Roberts is in one that's really good. And the band played on, and there's so many of them. But anyway, they're all talking about the same kind of thing. They just kind of let it go and thought the idea was, in the religious side, was this is God's way of clearing the earth of gay people, right? And so what was really cool about the time, though, is that right when it was really going crazy, and people were getting sick, and other people were trying to figure it out, and finally there was a test for it, and people would get tested, and somebody would be HIV positive, the roommates would just burn their stuff because they were afraid that, you know, we didn't know how it was transferred and all that stuff. It was just craziness. It was crazy. Finally, years into it, though, C.F. Brett Koop was Surgeon General. He was a Surgeon General. He got on the TV and said, everybody's saying that this is God's way of clearing out the gay people and whatever. So he's like, if you think that way, then think about this. Your chosen must be lesbian women because they have the least incidence of HIV and AIDS. You know, that has to both happen at the same time. If you're saying this is for this, then you have to must be believed this too. And I thought that was cool for somebody that was an actual official to get on and say, you know, you people are taking this way out of hand and getting it really crazy, and it just doesn't need to be that way. And he really kind of pulled it down to where people could look at it like, okay, there's all kinds of different people that have this. It's not just gay people and blah, blah, blah. And there was a huge blame about, well, it all happened because of blood transfusions and stuff. And some of it did, but a lot of it was IV drug users. And I mean, it was just every kind of thing, right? There was all different kinds of things that were causing it to spread. And then it just kind of went crazy and spread. But I remember going to the hospital to visit my friends that were in there. And it's like, they would have like no family in there visiting them or nobody around in the AIDS wing that was dedicated to dealing with the AIDS patients. You'd go in there and there'd be like nobody in there except for the nurses and stuff. And they were all hazmated out and everything. It was crazy. And I went in there to see my friend and he was so bad. It started out that my roommate downstairs got it and I had to watch him kind of rot away. Like, it was terrible how it was because they just didn't have any kind of medicine for it or anything. One thing would go wrong, so they'd give him medicine for that, and then it made him go blind as the side effect, and then this and that and whatever. And it was bad. It was really bad. It was this craziness thing. It was just like all blown out in the news as this horrible thing that gay people were bringing onto the world. I mean, you know, there's a lot of story there, but that's what I know for sure is that it was really, really, really bad at first. Got a little bit better. How many years later? 50 years later almost. And it's like, we're just now coming up with a livable medicine for it. So yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for that context, Michael. And just to be clear to everybody listening who might not know what we're talking about the HIV virus, mm-hmm. which is the human immunodeficiency virus, which is the virus that can progress to AIDS, which is acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, which can kill you. The HIV virus, if it's not treated appropriately, which is what we were seeing in the 80s and early 90s, it attacks your CD4 cells, which are aspect of the immune system. That's a very important role in maintaining your immune system. So this virus specifically targets those cells, which is what leads people's CD4 cells to radically decrease, which makes them more susceptible to particular viruses and bacteria and what we would call co-infections. But with all of that history aside, today in the 2020s, we have incredible science. We've made incredible progress. There are medications known as PrEP, which means pre-exposure prophylaxis, which have a 99% efficacy rate in preventing HIV. So it's incredible that we've made that progress. We also have PEP, known as post-exposure prophylaxis, that if you've had sex with someone of an unknown HIV status, you can take PEP, P-E-P, for 30 days, and that essentially, if you take it within, I believe, 48 to 72 hours, that essentially knocks down the chance of you contracting HIV by 99% as well. So we have come a long way. And other than PrEP and PEP, we have what's known as ART antiretroviral therapies for people that are actively positive with HIV. Like I said earlier in the podcast, they can live a long, thriving life living with HIV nowadays. So I just want to give the medical background to all of this so that people know that if you do contract HIV, you can live a long, healthy life. Another important thing that I want to say is that even people that are not HIV positive that have sex with an HIV positive person that is on these antiretroviral therapies and their viral load is so suppressed that even the virus can no longer be detected. We call that U equals U. U equals U means undetectable equals untransmissible. U equals U means that if someone that is HIV positive, if their viral load is suppressed by these medications that we now have, if they are completely undetectable, the virus cannot be transmitted to a partner that is HIV negative. So I think that's super important for people to know. So I just think it's like sex education is super important and also medical knowledge is super important. So I just wanted to add all of this information in there. So that those of you that might not know this, now you know. So Jackson and Trisha, do you have any other thoughts on the AIDS epidemic or HIV?
I shared with Stevie in my podcast, and Michael, I don't know if you know this. I had a roommate in the late 80s, early 90s, was named Ricky, and he was diagnosed with his HIV and positive. His was an unfortunate. A guy found out he was HIV positive and decided to go to one of the local parks where we lived. And that's back in the time when gay guys cruised the parks. That's what they did. And he had sexual encounter with this gentleman and became HIV positive as a result. Ricky was very upfront after I met him. And before we even moved in together, he told me all about it. And I'm like, that's fine. I'm not afraid of it. You know, I'm not afraid of you. I'll be there for you and we'll go through it. And he was such a beautiful soul, had amazing singing voice. He looked like Tim McGraw, the country singer. He'd put on that black cowboy hat and you would swear you were looking at Tim McGraw. He was such a good and sweet and kind man. He lived HIV positive for 8 years, but when he went full-blown AIDS, he was gone within 6 weeks. And it was like he went from this beautiful, gorgeous, muscular man to this little frail human that had hardly no, he was just skin and bones is what it looked like. And it was very, very sad to watch. I was so proud of our lesbian community during that time because so many of the lesbian women were going in to the AIDS ward and reading to these guys and being there with them and being their companions and being family for them because their own family wasn't for them. Now, I will say for Ricky, whose family was super, super, super Southern Baptist, religious, crazy religious people. When he went full-blown AIDS, they brought him home and he stayed with them until he passed away. And I was so incredibly impressed with his mother because she was so religious, but she fought whatever bias she had and she was there for her son. I mean, she was holding his hand when he took his last breath. So there are beautiful and tragic stories from the AIDS epidemic throughout. And drugs and everything that came after, you can see on the timeline, once Ryan White, who was the child that got AIDS as a result of a blood transfusion, once he got it, it was like, then they realized, oh no, this can happen to other people. It's not just in the gay community. And as a matter of fact, I have a friend who had a blood transfusion during that time. And for 7 years after she had her transfusion, she had to go in periodically to be tested to make sure that she didn't contract AIDS. Because at that point in time, they had no good screening for the blood to make sure somebody wasn't HIV positive when they gave blood. So it's a tragic part of our history. We lost a whole generation of beautiful queer men. And out of everything that I've witnessed in our community, aside from just the senseless killing of trans people, this almost broke my, I mean, you know, because so many people I knew had it and so many people that I loved died with it. It was just sad. It was just so sad. But the medical advancements now, You're right. And that's great. Now having HIV is no different than having an autoimmune disease like I have or like anybody else has. And I'm glad we're taking the stigma. The stigma is not like it was about this disease. It was so stigmatized when it first came out. So it's refreshing and amazing to see that it's not stigmatized anymore. And the people that have it and are living with it are very vocal about it, and they share their stories. And that's how we get change. We can't change if people don't tell their stories. And if to Trisha's point, what she's talking about, there are people that don't want to share their lived experience. And I understand that, because so many people do have a lot of trauma in their lived experience. My way of keeping my little part of my history and my mark in this world is sharing my lived history. And, you know, I'm always happy to do that any chance I get. So it was horrible. I'm glad we're at a point now where it's not like it was. And I'm just sad that we lost all the people that we did.
Well, thank you, Jackson, for honoring your friend Ricky and honoring all the gay men that died of AIDS during that time period. And also the non-gay men, the children and anyone else that contracted the virus, which is why I wanted to have this conversation today. It's fairly spoken about in the queer and trans community. I think this is important to speak about. I read an article maybe a year ago that the United Kingdom, and I'm not sure if it's in particular pockets of the UK, I would have to follow up on this, but the gist of the article was the fact that there is an increased incidence of HIV in the heterosexual community within the last year or two, because of lack of education about HIV and the perpetual stigma that this is a gay virus. It's not a gay virus. I always tell people that a virus doesn't have a sexuality or doesn't have attraction. but there are particular sexual behaviors that lead to the susceptibility of that, one of which is anal sex. So I just wanted to communicate all of that and let everyone know that that's a prime example that because of all of the education that we have done in the queer and trans community, this is one example where the incidence of the virus has decreased in our own community and increased in the non-queer and trans communities in the UK. So I found that super fascinating, and this is why education is super important. So that aside, Ms. Trisha Carlisle, it's your turn.
So thank you all for that, for all the wonderful input on this. Stevie, I love the fact that you are incorporating medical education into this as well, so that people who are listening to this podcast, wherever they're listening to it, who may not really truly understand this the way that we do, because we lived through it. You know, and even today, we're still living through it to a lesser scale. We have a lot of medical advancement that has made it less of a death sentence, honestly, for people. I mean, obviously, if you don't take care of yourself, if you don't get the medical attention that you need and take the medicines to help with this, it can have detrimental ramifications. You have to take care of yourself. It's still one of those things that still requires attention. It's not like you can still go around and just be very haphazardous when it comes to your sexual endeavors. You still have to be careful, but at the same time, it's not as scary as it was 20, 30 years ago. So it's important to know that too. But that's with any STD, you still have to be very, very careful on this. I think a lot of the stigma around AIDS in the beginning and HIV infection, especially back in the 80s and the 90s, it came from a lot of miseducation. Medical advancements were not happening as quickly back then either. So this was happening when this was coming up, and it hit, the first reported and known instances of it were in the gay community, which is where a lot of the stigma comes, that it's a gay disease, because this is something that's carried from the 80s all the way to now. People know that the first instances were in the gay community. And so, however it's evolved, you're going to have those people who are going to feel the same way about it, because it did originate. They feel it originated in the gay community because those were the first instances that showed up. So even now, it's like, yeah, it's going into the hetero community, but that's because people have sex with gay or bi people. And so it kind of, you know, no matter how you spin it, you're going to have these people who are going to have these issues with it, because they refuse to get the education they need, or they refuse to see it the way it is. They just choose to believe what they want to believe. And this is why I feel the education is extremely important. I think it's very important that no matter how you feel about a subject, it's always good to just sit and take the time to get other perspectives. AIDS was very often misdiagnosed. It was often misunderstood. It was very often mischaracterized. And there were a lot of rumors floating around about it for the longest time. People didn't understand for a while the difference between HIV infection and AIDS infection. And for a while, people equated the two, because until the medical advancements happened that made it, you know, what it is today, for a while there, when you were HIV infected, it was certain that you were going to contract AIDS, develop into AIDS. So I think as time has gone by, as people have learned more about it, it has been destigmatized, as everyone has said, because it's become less, I don't know how less common it's become. I still think it's happening. It's just being treated. And it's, again, less of a death sentence now, because it's like COVID. COVID's still happening on a lesser scale, but it's being treated. We know now how to treat it and how to take care of it. So it just took time to get us to where we are right now. So I do think it's still important to have these discussions about AIDS, because it is still a very real thing, and it's still a risk for people who are not being careful with it, people exploiting this. I mean, for a while there, I don't know how many times this has happened, but I mean, I've heard this several times where people would actually go out with AIDS, with HIV. They were not getting the care that they needed. They were purposely going out and infecting other people, whether they were mad about their situation, whether they were doing it to get even with somebody. I mean, it happened. So it's a good thing now that we have a handle on it, but it wasn't always that way. And so it's important, just like we talked about Stonewall and where we've come since then, it's equally important to have that conversation about AIDS and where we've come since then as well. And so thank you for bringing up this topic. I think it's something we all need to be aware of and understand, because like you said, Stevie, it is still part of our history, and it's very much still part of people culture in general. So we need to keep these conversations in the forefront.
Absolutely. Thank you, Trish, for addressing your thoughts on the HIV epidemic during the 80s and early 90s. I wanted to address this whole thing that, like, this is a gay virus, because we know that the Center for Disease Control, the CDC here in the United States, acknowledges that this virus, similar to COVID, actually was transmitted from animals. COVID, I believe, came from more of a bird population, if I recall correctly, although don't quote me on that. But HIV, through a lot of research, was determined most likely jumped from chimpanzees to human beings. When you learn like microbiology and virology, like you do in medical school, you learn that throughout human evolution and throughout the evolution of the planet that we live on, viruses, just like human beings, evolve. So I think it's super important to note that, you know, similar to COVID, there was this evolution in these viruses happening, which made it possible for it to be transmitted from an animal population to a human population. And I also just wanted to give a little bit more context as to what I was saying quickly about anal sex. Let's just come out and talk about it. I don't want people to misinterpret what I said, that simply having anal sex will give you HIV. That is 100% false. But you have to have sex with someone that is infected with the virus for that to happen. This may seem dumb that I'm articulating this, but I do not want anybody to misconstrue what I have stated. And the thing here is that the tissue of the rectum does have susceptibility to tearing. There's something called anal fissures, which is like a tear in the rectal tissue. And sometimes if you're having, you know, aggressive sex, that tissue can tear. And if someone is infected with the HIV virus, the virus can get like inside that tissue and then spread to the rest of the body. So I just wanted to clarify that. I think it's super important when communicating public health information to be precise about your language, because otherwise that's how misinformation spreads. So thank you all for having this conversation about the AIDS epidemic. I do think it's super important that we continue to have these conversations, and bless all of medical science for getting us to where we are today and making the progress that we have in terms of HIV being a livable condition to live with. Like you said, Jackson, it's similar in a way to autoimmune conditions. You know, we have enough treatments that we can offer people now where they can live a long, prosperous and thriving life, even if they have particular health conditions. So yes, thank you all for holding this conversation and more broadly for holding this entire conversation as our first official episode of Pride Month 2024. I'm so thrilled to have elders here reminding us of our history and all of the progress that we've made and all of the progress that we have yet to make. I'm getting smiles and nods on Zoom right now. So everyone here is keenly aware of all of the progress that we still have to make. But I think it's important during these celebratory events that we do remember that Pride started as a riot. And we are still rioting. We are still throwing bricks. We are still fighting. Because, you know, in some ways, I remember on the episode with Jackson, we talked about in that episode how we're kind of regressing. So it's super important to hold space for these stories to be told, for our history to be remembered, for those that have gone before us to be honored, respected, and valued. And I'm so grateful for all of you here. So the last question that I want to ask you is, what does Pride mean to you?
Well, I've been asked this question a lot, and I tell you, over the years, it changes because we continually grow and learn and ideas in your minds change. When I think about what does Pride mean to me, I think it means that it's the way that I look at myself and that I am just like proud of who I am. I love myself for who I am. I'm proud of who I am. I fit in this world just like everybody else does. I find my humanity in who I am and recognize it in other people and realize that there's not really that much difference between people as much as we think there is. And as much as we try to divide people, we all have the same humanity. You know, we're all just people on this earth trying to make it through, right? And so when I think about what does pride mean, it just means that I don't look at myself as something less than when I look at society and people in general. I'm proud of who I am. It isn't as much of an issue in the world for me that I'm gay, because I never tell anybody. It's just who I am and what I am, and I've always just accepted it. It's just that I think that I'm proud. I mean, that's why it started, you know, let's be proud to be who we are instead of shrink back because society is trying to tell us to. So yeah, I just think it's that.
I love that. And it just is. I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday about queer and trans issues, and I said, you know what? It just is. You have this internal knowing, and that's all it is. So what does pride mean to you?
Pride for me, just, I'm a lot like Michael. It means for me that I am able to live my life to the fullest, to my true authentic self, to be moving in this world and taking up space and be seen and be recognized and to be loved. I mean, you know, I'm not close with any of my biological family. My mom's gone. Two of my sisters passed away. The two remaining sisters I have are not allowed in my life because they don't understand me. And that's fine. So I've made my own family in this community, and I'm proud of that. And that's what pride is to me, is we take each other. I mean, look at all of us right now on this podcast together. We had a person from Germany who has, God almighty, can you think of a worse place to be trans and queer at that time? I mean, I just look at the resilience of our movement, of our people, where we were and where we are and where we've been and where we need to get back to. And pride for me is just continuing the fight, continuing to make this place safer, to make this world safer. So the kids, and I'm speaking to all my queer and trans youth out there, we want you here. We need you here. We need your voices in this world. And pride for me is making sure that we have that for them and whatever means we need to. So if we need to throw bricks to do it, by all means, let's throw bricks. If we need to burn it down, let's burn it down and rebuild it. That's what we do. And that's pride.
Thank you for that, Jackson. I'm just witnessing everybody's reactions right now to him saying, burn it all down, honeys. Trish, why don't you follow up on that?
Oh my God. You know, I think anything I could say right now would pale in comparison to what they just said. Oh my God. I'm just sitting here like loving every bit of it. Jackson, what you just said about burn it all down. Yes. Oh my God. Let's just burn it all down. No, honestly, Pride to me is all about, I think it's not about one thing. It's just about everything about being part of the LGBTQIA plus community as a whole. Whether you're the L, the G, the B, the T, we're all still part of the same community as a whole. And respectively, we should all be proud of each other. We should all be proud of who we are, who we have always been. However we got to this point in our lives and our respective individual lives, we should all be proud of each other for that, because it's not easy being part of this community. We are a marginalized community as a whole, and we've been through a lot of tumultuous times over the past however many years. People in the 1800s, I mean, the things that they dealt with, you know, there was adversity back then as well, you know? So the fact that we've been able to come to where we are right now and fight this adversity and persevere over this adversity. And even though we've had everything thrown at us the way that we've had thrown at us over the past several years, and even now, and we still continue to persevere, we still continue to demand that our voices are heard. And regardless if anyone's listening, we're still talking. And that's really, really important to do, because we have messages that need to be out there, and we need people to understand that we're people, we're living, breathing human beings. We bleed the same. And we're just trying to live our lives. We're trying to survive in a very, very toxic world right now. I mean, we've got so much going on around us. The fact that we're able to still do this and still come out of this being happy with who we are, being content and happy in our skin. I've been happy with who I am for the last 35 years. I mean, it took me a little minute to figure out who I am. And you know, over the last 35 years, I've continued to learn more and more and more about myself. Every year, I look back at who I was before, and I see how far I've come and how much I've grown. And I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud that, you know, I'm not afraid that I used to be a 17-year-old boy who didn't know who I was at that particular time. I'm very proud to say that over the past 35 years, I have grown into this person now, and that I'm happy with who I am. And I'm happy with overall how the world sees me. To me, pride is just being proud of who you are, proud of each other. We're all family in this community. You know, I'm proud of my allies too, because of so many who have just stepped up to the plate and they've swung the bat for me. They've been there for me and they've supported me and they've supported us as a whole. And so there's a lot to be proud of. And I think pride spans such a huge arena of ideas and nuances. It's very, very nuanced, but it's important. And it's important to have that pride, because I think pride is what we need to help us to keep the momentum, to keep moving forward and keep trying to bring the world together. Even if they don't accept us, at least stop trying to hurt us. We need to know people care enough to just let us be and let us live.
Absolutely. I love all of your answers to that. So just real quick, I want to know where people can find you. And I'm going to answer that question for Jhampa, since they are not with us and they're resting and healing right now. You can find Dr. Jhampa Wurst at Queer and Buddhist on Instagram. And Michael, where can people find you?
I'm on Instagram at Michael John, J-O-N, Michael John Peterson, all together, S-O-N, Peterson, just like one solid word. So just at Michael John Peterson.
Jackson.
You can find me on Insta at J McKenzie Pace, at J McKenzie Pace is my Instagram. Also, any of the listeners, if you want to read a really good queer and lesbian action thriller set of books, you can find me on Amazon, same name, J McKenzie Pace. I have a page there as well. So, a little self-plug. Sorry, Stevie.
It's all good. And Trisha, where can people find you?
I am still on TikTok. You can find me at Trisha D. Carlisle. Trisha D. Carlisle, TRISIADCARLISLE. That's at TikTok. And then on Instagram, you can find me at Chorky Mama, DHORKIEMAMA. And yeah, and there is also a Beacons link on both of those profiles. So you can click that link and it'll take you to anything else that you could possibly want to know about me.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all so much for being on this first episode of Pride Month with me. I can't think of better people that I would want to have on this podcast right now. All of you are some of my favorite peeps. So it's been such a joy to have this conversation with all of you today and to serve as a reminder of our queer and trans history, which is exactly what I wanted. So thank you for being a part of this.
It's been great. Happy Pride.
Happy Pride. Thank you for having us on, Stevie. This is an amazing podcast, and I look forward to many, many more in the future.
Happy Pride, Stevie, and everybody, and thanks for having me as well. Trish, it was so great to catch up with you. Michael, finally glad I got to meet you. I know we follow each other on Instagram. You know, once again, I just want to thank you, Trisha, because you were there for me in the beginning, and you didn't even realize it, and I'm glad I got the opportunity to tell you what your work has meant to me. So that was a big plus for me to be able to do that today, too. So happy that Pride.
Means the world to me. Thank you so much. I appreciate you, and happy Pride to everybody.
Yes, happy Pride, everybody. Live it up. Be your fabulous badass selves if it's safe for you to do so. And for all of those that can't be out and show their true colors, know that our hearts are with you. We have all been there. And I'm getting teary-eyed as I express that. But know that all of us are out here living out loud for those of us that can't right now. So we see you, we hear you, we love you, we validate your existence if no one has told you that. So honoring those that can't be so out and loud right now. And on my last note for this episode, please stay tuned for episode number 11. It will be the second Pride Month episode for June 2024. So stay tuned for all of that. And thank you for tuning in to Queer Storytime, the podcast.
Hey friends, I'm so delighted that you've made it this far. I sincerely hope that this episode has opened your heart and provided you with valuable insights into the lived experiences of those in gender and sexually expansive communities. There are several ways in which you can support this podcast. Make sure that you're subscribed if you haven't already done so, and be sure to share it with friends and family. Queer Storytime is a professionally produced podcast, which costs about $80 US per episode. If you feel called to do so, I kindly ask that you support future episodes of this podcast by making a one-time or ongoing contribution that is sustainable to you. Links to contact me or to contribute to this podcast are found within the description of this episode. From the bottom of my queer heart to yours, I'm sincerely grateful for you tuning in to Queer Storytime, the podcast. Hugs and love, y'all. Until next time.